the Divided Kingdom. This is Lou Caverly.
And Elizabeth Cuppy Caverly.
It's August 9th as we record live on Global Star. It looks like all the occult connections we've been talking about concerning the globalists, the origin of the Club of Rome, the Bohemian Grove Summer Molochow meeting, and tonight, the Bilderbergers, all these point back to the one in charge of their occult connections, Satan himself. A listener from my old neck of the woods, the Boston area, has just sent us newspaper clippings that demonstrate Satan is going up and down, to and fro, as the Bible says he does, trying to cause mischief and harm this summer. Here are excerpts from two of the articles the listener sent. And I believe that both of these are from the Boston Herald. The first one, August 2nd, 2023, Satan exorcised from Hub. Quote rules for Boston in Satanic Temple Prayer Flap by Gayla Cawley. Not today, Satan. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit the Satanic Temple filed against the city of Boston, ruling that the city council did not discriminate against the group when it chose not to grant its request to deliver an opening prayer at a weekly meeting. Quote, invocation speakers are invited at the discretion of the individual city councilors, which heightens Establishment Clause concerns, said U.S. District Court Judge Angel Kelly, and she wrote that in a 31-page ruling filed on Monday. And she continued, the evidence on record, however, suggests that the city councilor's discretion was not exercised in such a way that individuals or groups were excluded from giving an invocation because of their religious beliefs. Judge Kelly said the city council, quote, did not allow some requests while denying others, unquote. Rather, she wrote that, quote, the city council's primary motivation in selecting an invocation speaker, unquote, based on evidence reviewed by the court, has always been the individual or organization's involvement in the community. The Satanic Temple filed suit against the city in January 2021, asserting that the council violated both the U.S. Constitution and the state of Massachusetts Constitution when it failed to allow the group to open one of its weekly meetings with a prayer, court documents state. Kelly noted that while the majority of the city council's invocation speakers, quote, have been undoubtedly of a Christian denomination, unquote, speakers of other faiths have been invited, allowing for a diversity of religious views. She also dismissed an alleged violation to the Free Exercise Clause, finding that the council's legislative prayer practice did not make it more difficult for the Satanic Temple to practice its religion. Now, the other article is called Mark of the Beast. Bust at Texas Church. A Texas man, and this, by the way, was also August 2nd, this one from the New York Post. A Texas man with a distinctive 656 head tattoo has been busted for desecrating a local Catholic church with satanic graffiti, including the near-match number of the devil, 666, according to cops. Isaac Jordan Soto Olivares, 27, was booked Thursday in El Paso after police say he was, quote, observed on video surveillance, unquote, trashing the Most Holy Trinity Catholic Church 10 days earlier. Cops said they found holy oil poured throughout the church, as well as crosses turned upside down and 666 scrawled on the rosary, candle, mirror, and prayer room tabernacle. Soto Olivares was ID'd from video of the burglary, police said, without detailing if it was thanks to the distinctive forehead tattoo seen in his booking photo. Along with defacing the church and causing more than $4,000 in damages, Soto Olivares has allegedly made off with several items that were recovered in his home, the El Paso Times reported. He faces burglary, criminal mischief, damage to a place of worship charges, and was being held on $50,000 bond. And I'll just add, just because some of the globalist organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, the UN, World Economic Forum, and the Bilderbergers seem a lot more dignified and polished than Satanists, hardcore Antifa-type rioters, this doesn't mean they aren't nefarious as well, and part of a cunning front for Satan's plan to destroy.
Oh, Lou, it's so true. And we look at our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and the listeners can go there and they can see the title of tonight's program. And then soon it will be in the archives, and you can tell others to go to DividedKingdomRadio.com and hear our past important programs. And tonight's title mentions something about the extinction of man and some of these earlier globalists, the climate changers, and we've been talking about the Club of Rome, the occult roots. We have been getting into Bohemian Grove and what the occult things there are. And tonight we just allude to theosophy. Helena Blavatsky believed, I'm now reading from the Demonic Roots of Globalism, a wonderful book by Gary H. Kaw. And it says that Helena Blavatsky believed the father of lies and helped to spread his false light. When we look at her statements in The Secret Doctrine, her most significant work, and I would point out that Hitler had this by his bedside, very important effect probably on him. And she claimed that she got The Secret Doctrine from ascended masters. Now, we would interpret as Christians these as being demonic spirits. So here is a quote from The Secret Doctrine. And now it stands proven that Satan, or fiery dragon, the lord of phosphorus, brimstone, was a theological improvement. And Lucifer, or light bearer, is in us. It is our mind, our tempter, our redeemer, our intelligent liberator and savior from pure animalism. And now there you can see the mixed up quality there. You can't have a tempter and a redeemer, can you, Lou?
No, that seems the direct opposites to me.
Exactly. And so she had followers who carried on this, shall we say, evil legacy of theosophy. And one of the most important ones was Alice Bailey. And, of course, she was hearing from another ascended master, the Tibetan. And, of course, there was this thing called the hierarchy. And we might get into that at a later time, more about it. There was something called the Lucis Trust. And this was an organization that many other globalists were part of. I think the founding members of the Council on Foreign Relations were connected to it. And so this is what Alice Bailey's ascended master gave to her. There is, as you well know, no angry God, no hell, and no vicarious atonement. And the only hell is the earth itself, where we learn to work out our own salvation. And she also said, up till now, the mark of the Savior has been the cross. The future holds within its silence other modes of saving humanity. The cup of sorrow and the agony of the cross are well nigh finished. Joy and strength will take their place. Instead of sorrow, we shall have a joy which will work out in happiness and lead eventually to bliss. I had a little trouble seeing that word the way that was printed. So we're getting a whole different theology. And so she says then, again, the only hell is the earth itself, where we learn to work out our own salvation. Now, Lou, that's humanism, isn't it?
I think that just fits the definition of humanism, yes.
We don't need Jesus Christ to save us. So she says this teaching about hell is a reminder of the sadistic turn which was given to the thinking of the Christian church in the Middle Ages and to the erroneous teaching to be found in the Old Testament ancient Jehovah, the tribal God of the Jews. Jehovah is not God. As these erroneous ideas die out, the concept of hell will fade from man's recollection, and its place will be taken by an understanding of the law which makes each man work out his own salvation, which leads him to right the wrongs which he may have perpetuated in his lives on earth. Now, there we see the belief in reincarnation, and which enables him eventually to clean his own slate. And so you can see there's an anti-Christian, an anti-Jewish element there. God's people, as told about in the Old Testament. The Old Testament is rejected. So there were other followers still who were not maybe completely with theosophy, but they were affected by this same demonic idea, which will result, you and I know, in return of persecution to Bible-believing Christians. Mrs. Hubbard, I believe her name was Marilyn Hubbard, and she now is gone from the earth. But this is what she said. We, the elders, have been patiently waiting until the very last moment before the quantum transformation to take action to cut out this corrupted and corrupting element in the body of humanity. It is like watching a cancer grow. Something must be done before the whole body is destroyed. The self-centered members must be destroyed. There is no atonement. There is no alternative. Only the God-centered can evolve. Fortunately, you, dearly beloveds, are not responsible for this act. We are. We are in charge of God's selection process for planet Earth. He selects, we destroy. Now, we can look at that, and we can think about the WEF. We can think about all those other globalists who have the depopulation goal and who really want to destroy Earth, Earth's people, we should say, Earth's human people, or animals too, but they're going to destroy everything if Dane Wigington's thesis is right about what's going on physically with the planet. So this whole thing, you see, is anti-Christian. They must be eliminated. So Hubbard goes on to say, he selects, we destroy. We are the riders of the pale horse death. We will use whatever means we must to make this act of destruction as quick and painless as possible to the one half of the world who are capable of evolving. Now, everything is global and connected. Each person is about to inherit the power of destruction and co-creation. Now, that's very troubling. As human beings, are we supposed to inherit a power of destruction? And again, Lou, you were talking about these things are incongruous together, aren't they?
Yeah, they do not go together in a sensible way.
No, it's good and evil. Good is evil. Evil is good. The inner voice, the higher self, each person's own connection to God, independent of priest, text, church, or mentor, must be heard directly. Those of you who know what is happening, the 1/4 who are now listening to the higher self, are to be guides for the rest who will be panicked and confused. Note, and this is Gary Call now saying, notice that the elders want to make this destruction painless, not for those who are being destroyed, but for those who will have to witness the destruction. The so-called God-centered co-creators. So I think this gives us a little idea of the malevolence of Satan that is really back of some of these good-sounding organizations like the Davos meetings there of the WEF, like the Bilderberg Group. So we move now right here to telling you more about the Bilderberg Group. And this was from thewire.in. The secret of Bilderberg Group is a key to understanding the global power elite. Institutions like the Bilderberg Group play a vital role in constructing a global ideological consensus among elites that is then brought home and applied to the nation. This was June 18, 2022, by Stuart J. Hooper. And we find out here that, first of all, the conceptualization of this elite, we're going back to this again. Writing in the 1950s, we have an author of the power elite, C. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, Mills. Conceptualization of an elite was rooted in facts of power that existed for the most part within the nation state. One big exception to this was the Bilderberg Group that formed in 1954, which brought together elites from across the world into a transnational network. The group's official website states that it was developed in response to opinions, quote, expressed by leading citizens on both sides of the Atlantic. it fails to say how non-leading citizens, the general public, had a say in its organization or operation. The World Economic Forum, Trilateral Commission, and Atlantic Council serve as similar transnational elite knowledge networks where individuals with shared, in this case, globalist interests can work to further their own agenda. To think of institutions like the Bilderberg Group as inconsequential is to underestimate the role they play in constructing a global ideological consensus among elites that is then brought home and applied to the, quote, nation. Bilderberg allows elites to interact and acquire a shared education in how to think about the world in globalized terms. Now, I might interject there again from what I read to you from Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey from the Ascended Masters material they got. We know what this kind of globalized world is. It's a murderous place in which true Christian Bible believers had better flee or stand up before it comes. So we go on to talk about the Bilderberg Group's powerful members come from across the world and represent the political, economic, military, technological, and ideological spheres of globalization. There is absolutely no representation of alternative interests and ideological positions such as small business, populist, socialist, or nationalist. At Bilderberg in early June 2022, British Conservative Party heavyweight Michael Gove attended alongside David Lammy of the Labour Party, his supposed political opponent. Now, Lou, we're right back there to these opposite things, aren't we?
Yes. Yes. It seems as if the group like this, these international leaders, really don't cotton to any kind of ideology at home. They just want to be in charge.
And they want to push this global killing off the nation state ideal that they've always
yes.
wanted to do, the one world order. So, again, what you're saying, then the article says it reinforces that ultimately this calls into question the existence of difference between these parties and whether they are more concerned with the problems of their voters or those of transnational corporations. You know, there's another little thing. Corporations, they're big in all of these big meetings. Other attendees included UN officials, the CEOs of oil giants, both the Prime Minister and King of the Netherlands, Canada's Deputy Prime Minister, the founders of technology giants, including Google's Eric Schmidt, major think tank leaders and CEOs of pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer and GlaxoSmithKline. This year, 2023's most important attendee was undoubtedly Jens Stoltenberg, NATO's current Secretary General. And we have to know that apparently Bilderberg's secretive nature is to ensure its participants can speak freely in an environment of trust. But precisely what would these people who themselves claim a proclivity for transparency and democracy want to speak about, free from public discussion, criticism, and alternative points of view? The public, rationally, can only surmise that it's nothing good. Unless politicians revert to assuming their proper role as national and local leaders responsible for their own constituents' needs, as opposed to those of transnational corporations, the global crisis of democracy is surely set to continue.
And now we have an article, an excerpt. Bilderbergmeetings.com is where this one came from. And they say in parentheses, official website. Since its inaugural meeting in 1954, the annual Bilderberg meeting has been a forum for informal discussions to foster dialogue between Europe and North America. Every year, approximately 130 political leaders and experts from industry, finance, labor, academia, and the media are invited to take part in the meeting. About two-thirds of the participants come from Europe and the rest from North America. One-third from politics and government, and the rest from other fields. The meeting is a forum for informal discussions about major issues. The meetings are held under the Chatham House Rule, which states that participants are free to use the information received but neither the identity nor the affiliation of the speaker or speakers nor of any other participant may be revealed. Thanks to the private nature of the meeting, the participants take part as individuals rather than in any official capacity, and hence are not bound by the conventions of their office or by pre-agreed positions. As such, they can take time to listen, reflect, and gather insights. There is no detailed agenda, no resolutions are proposed, no votes are taken, and no policy statements are issued. The 69th Bilderberg meeting took place from 18th to 21st May 2023 in Lisbon, Portugal.
And from The Guardian, Lou, we have this headline: at Bilderberg's Big Wig Bash, two things are guaranteed, Kissinger and secrecy. This is by Charlie Skelton, and this was May 20th, 2023. The annual elite networking, diplomatic, and lobbying event took place in splendid seclusion behind closed doors in Lisbon. The Portuguese sun was doing its cheery best to make this year's Bilderberg meeting seem warm and welcoming, but nothing could take the deathly chill out of the official agenda of the secretive shindig for some of the world's most powerful people. Ukraine, Russia, and NATO weighed heavy on the schedule. This annual three-day conference is many things: an elite networking event, a diplomatic summit, a lobbying opportunity for transnational financial interests, an intense focus of conspiracy theory gossip. But above all, the 69th Bilderberg Conference at the glorious Pestana Palace appeared like a council of war. And the article goes on to say that the world, Western world, faces two epic defining threats and challenges: artificial intelligence and China, both of which featured on this year's agenda. And then I think there's just another little note about this meeting in 2023. As ever, Big Oil was a powerful presence at Bilderberg, with the heads of Total, BP, and Gelp getting a seat at the table. Big Pharma had a healthy presence, with the heads of Merck and Pfizer and a director of AstraZeneca on the list. And the international chemicals industry is represented by the CEO of BASF and a board member of Coca-Cola.
Now we have some information from a book entitled The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. And Elizabeth, I don't have the author's name on the tip of my tongue.
That's Daniel Eschelin.
Daniel Eschelin, right. The secrecy of the Bilderbergers has captured the imaginations of novelists such as Robert Ludlum and Gail Lins. The Netherlands' Prince Bernard subscribed to the belief that severe economic dips like the Great Depression could be avoided if responsible and influential leaders could actually manage world events behind the necessary public posturing. For this reason, he was asked to organize the first meeting of, quote, like-minded, unquote, representatives from all facets of the world's economic, political, industrial, and military realms in 1954. They met at the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek, Holland, from May 29th and to May 31st. And at the end of that meeting, the attendees agreed to form a secret association. Most reports contend the original members named their alliance the Bilderberg Group after the hotel where they made their covenant. Author Georgios C. Hatton, however, discovered that German-born Prince Bernard was an officer in the Reiter SS Corps in the early 1930s and was on the board of an IG subsidiary, Farben Bilder. In his book, Rape of the Constitution, Death of Freedom, Hatton claims Prince Bernard drew on his Nazi history and corporate management to encourage the, quote, super-secret policy-making group to call themselves the Bilderbergers after Farben Bilder, in memory of the Farben executive's initiative to organize Heinrich Himmler's Circle of Friends. That's in quote.
And
they're
Lou,
old friends.
We have to now bring this right back up to the interviews we had a month or so ago with Dr. Dennis Cuddy about the power elite and the secret Nazi plan. And we remember that how he told us in the 1940s, around 1942, I think they had a Red House meeting. I think that was at a hotel. And they began to plan how, if they lost the war, the Nazi movement would reemerge in the second generation. So a lot of funding began to go to places in South America, billions of dollars. Some of this money went to laboratory work. And, you know, we can trace this Nazi influence possibly into our present medical, pharma, police state complex. Some years back, you have presented an article, I think it was from Newsweek at that time, from their hard copy, about the drug thalidomide. And that was a terrible drug that pregnant women took, and then consequently their little children were born with missing limbs, deformed limbs. And that article really, really showed how a lot of these pharmaceutical members and heads and, you know, people working for developing thalidomide were ex-Nazis. So we can see that there is this trend that possibly a lot of these leaders are not just part of the Lucis Trust. They're not just part of theosophy. They're not just American. They are people brought together, including some of those men who were brought over from Operation Paperclip, brought over from Germany, ex-Nazis, by our CIA and others. So there is a very, very labyrinthine network of people in this kind of a reborn Nazi plan. And, of course, we always bring out the Jesuit aspect of it, too, because that was part of Hitler's regime. There were influences like that. The Marxism, the social justice element that we see reemerging today, all of this is playing a role, and it's a very important role. And while we're bringing up Dr. Dennis Cuddy, we've had some late reports that he had to return to the hospital and was having some complications from the hematoma in his leg. So do pray hard, listeners, for Dennis Cuddy. And we thank all of you for supporting us in prayer and giving us help financially, too. We are involved in something that's very demanding right now, and we have worked night and day for 4 weeks, haven't we?
That's right. We've been
so
mighty busy.
If we seem a little tired, that's why, and we hope that what we're doing will benefit all of you and others according to God's plan. So you can keep us in prayer for our provision, our protection, our health, and you can pray for Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we're so thankful that one or two of you sent something for Dennis, and we have now mailed that directly on to him. So we hope that he is back home from the hospital, or will be shortly. And if you'd like to help us stay on the air, we do appreciate your help so very much. You can send some cash, a money order, or a check. You can send it made out to WWCR, or you can make it out to Global Star Communications. We could use a $50 check to Global Star Communications. That would be very, very helpful. Todd and Don Wade have produced our program, and now for, I guess it's 12 years, isn't it, Lou, since 2011?
I believe it is, yes.
It's hard to imagine. But they were there with us right after we left the Genesis Communications Network. They were there to save our program and to produce us with excellent quality. We are so grateful to WWCR and very many people there who have worked tirelessly to make sure that you can hear our broadcast. And you can hear it on shortwave, 4.840 megahertz, Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then it repeats on 7.490 megahertz on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. And again on Mondays at 4 p.m. on 9.350 megahertz. Of course, you can hear us on the internet, WCR.com. You can hear us on some other venues too, like Liberty Radio Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net. You can go to their website and check their schedule to hear when you can hear some of our programs. You can go to KStarTalkRadio.com and hear us. And Kingdom Star. Excuse me, Lou, will you give that one, Kingdom Star?
Well, I believe it's KingdomStarRadio.com.
Yes, and you can check to see when we are on. So, again, if you would like to help us, send it to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, capital Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And, again, we ask for deep prayer for listener Brenda, who reports she is very ill. We don't have other details on it, but please pray for Brenda. Please keep praying for the Pennsylvania doctor, for his health, for his vocational remuneration, shall we say, the money that he needs to make to survive. And we just ask you to pray for the Divided Kingdom listeners, for all of them, that we can be a force, because we're all praying together to Almighty God. Now, whether you're a Roman Catholic, whether you are a Protestant, if you have accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, and you have repented, and you know that He is the only one by whom you can go to heaven and have eternal life, then you are saved. You know that you're saved, and we value all of you listeners, Protestant or Roman Catholic. You know, Lou and I can't go to a church anymore. There aren't any that we have found that didn't compromise in our area. So we believe that God has brought us to this wonderful fellowship with all of you. Gradually, we have become connected with you, and we have become friends with you. We love the letters we get from you, and they lift us. Your kind words of support and encouragement in your prayer mean everything to us. So now, go ahead, Lou. You're really telling us about this, that we were off on the Nazi connections there of Bilderberg and the prince who started them.
Yes, Prince Bernard was the gentleman who started it all. And in this book by, let me see what
Daniel
his name
S.
was.
Daniel S. Gillen?
No, this is by Georgios Hatton, I guess you pronounce it, called Rape of the Constitution, Death of Freedom. And he claims that Prince Bernard drew on the Nazi history and corporate management to encourage the super-secret policy-making group. And he says that Prince Bernard called it the Bilderbergers after Farben Bilder, in memory of the Farben executives. This would be I.G. Farben, famous Nazi-supporting chemical company. Anyway, Farben...
Who produced the gas for the camps? Isn't that right?
That's right. That was one of the things, and a lot of the weapons, too, that kept the Nazis going throughout World War II. Very important company. Anyway, it says, in memory of the Farben executives' initiative to organize Heinrich Himmler's Circle of Friends, that's in quotes, Circle of Friends, the elite wealth-building leaders has amply rewarded Himmler for his protection on the Nazi... that is, National Socialist programs, from the early days of Hitler's popularity through to Nazi Germany's defeat. The Royal Dutch family discreetly buried this part of Prince Bernard's background when, after the war, he became a top official in Royal Dutch Shell, a Dutch-British conglomerate. Today, this rich European oil company forms part of the inner circle of the Bilderberg elite. During the first meeting of the Bilderbergers, the founding members drew up their mission and their goals. According to one observer, they have continued in the same vein. Quote, the intention behind each and all of the Bilderberg meetings was about how to create an, quote, aristocracy of purpose, unquote, between Europe and the United States, and how to come to agreement on questions of policy, economics, and strategy, and jointly ruling the world. The NATO alliance was their crucial base of operation and subversion, because it afforded them the backdrop for their plans of perpetual war. Yes, that's right, perpetual war, or at least for their nuclear blackmail policy. Since 1954, the Bilderbergers have represented the elite and the absolute wealth of all Western nations. Financiers, industrialists, bankers, politicians, business leaders of multinational corporations, presidents, prime ministers, finance ministers, state secretaries, World Bank and International Monetary Fund representatives preside on world media conglomerates and military leaders. And continuing on, Elizabeth, did you want to say something there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. The fact remains, the public is not privy to the proceedings of their annual meetings. They meet in secrecy to discuss global strategy and reach consensus on a wide range of issues. Bilderberger members run, that's in quotes, run the central banks, and are therefore in a position to determine discount rates, money supply levels, interest rates, and the price of gold, as well as which countries receive loans. By manipulating money up and down the business chain, the Bilderbergers create billions, that's with a B, billions of dollars for themselves. The ideology of money and lust for power drives them. Every U.S. president since Ike Eisenhower has belonged to the Bilderberg Group. Not that they have all attended the meetings personally, but all have sent representatives. Another member is now ex-Prime Minister Tony Blair, as well as most of the principal members of the British government. Even Canada's high-profile past Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau, and I'll interject there, I think that's the father of the present Prime Minister, and Pierre Trudeau was a member. Past Bilderberg invitees and include Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Hillary and Bill Clinton, John Kerry, Melinda and Bill Gates, and Richard Pearl. No matter where you look, government, big business, and any other institution seeking to exercise power, their key to control is secrecy. Meetings such as those of the Organization for Europe, for Economic Cooperation and Development, the G8, World Trade Organization, World Economic Forum, central banks, the European Union Council of Ministers, and the EU Commissioners, EU summits, government cabinet meetings, numerous think tanks, and so on, are always conducted behind closed doors. The only possible reason for this is that they don't want you and me to know what they are discussing. The well-worn excuse for keeping things under wraps, quote, it is not in the public's interest, unquote, really means that it is not in the interest of the institutions in power for the public to know what they are doing and discussing. Beyond the common reluctance to reveal the proceeding of the meeting, the secrecy principle extends to the forums and meetings themselves. That is, by and large, we don't even know meetings are taking place, let alone what is being planned and discussed in them. There's the World Economic Forum at Davos in January, February, the Bilderberg and G8 meetings in April, May, and the IMF World Bank annual conference in September. A kind of international consensus emerges and is carried over from one meeting to the next, but no one's really leading it. This consensus becomes the background for G8 economic communiques. It becomes what informs the IMF when it imposes an adjustment program on Argentina, and it becomes what the U.S. president proposes to Congress.
And, Lou, we can now bring it down to an individual case, a national file, and this was in May 2023, had this headline, DeSantis mega donor Ken Griffin attends Bilderberg 2023. Globalist billionaire Ken Griffin attended Bilderberg 2023. Griffin has called Donald Trump a three-time loser and pledged to back Ron DeSantis for president. Ken Griffin joined other global elites at the shadowy Bilderberg conference in Europe. The topics discussed at the meeting were reportedly AI, and of course that's artificial intelligence, banking, China, energy transition. Oh, there come those electric cars, Lou.
Oh,
with
yes.
Those terrible electric fields that will destroy everybody's health. Europe, fiscal challenges, India, industrial policy and trade, NATO, that's a big one, Russia, transnational threats, Ukraine, and United States leadership. Speculation is building that Griffin is aiming to be Ron DeSantis' Treasury Secretary if the governor of Florida is elected president. Griffin supports endless wars. There's that theme again, Lou. All of these organizations want that.
Yes, they do.
Endless wars, giving billions in American taxpayer money to Ukraine, a globalist economy where factory jobs in America are almost non-existent, and a strong Chinese communist economy. National File previously reported that Griffin's pull on DeSantis was so strong that after DeSantis gave Tucker Carlson an answer on Ukraine that Mr. Griffin did not approve of, Griffin went down to Florida. And weeks later, DeSantis' tone on the Ukraine war changed from pro-peace to war hawk. Griffin has called Trump a three-time loser, and many wonder if the reasoning behind Griffin's attacks on Trump is because Trump has pledged to prevent World War III and save America's economy. Ron DeSantis spent his Memorial Day weekend raising money from globalist elite donors at a conference at the Four Seasons in Miami. Rooms for the conference start at about $700 a night. And Lou, what's up next?
Well, next we have from that same book, In the True Story of the Bilderberg Group by author Daniel Estulin, he says the following. Bilderberg objectives. And we have a little quote first from William Shannon. The Bilderbergers are searching for the age of post-nationalism. When we won't have countries, but rather regions of Earth surrounded by universal values. That is to say, a global economy, one world government, selected rather than elected, and a universal religion. To assure themselves of reaching these objectives, the Bilderbergers focus on a, quote, greater technical approach and less awareness on behalf of the general public, unquote. And now from the main book itself, the Bilderberg Group's chief fear is organized resistance. Members do not want the common people of the world to figure out what they are planning for the world's future, mainly a one-world government, world company, with a single global marketplace policed by one world army and financially regulated by one world, and this is in quotes, world bank, using one global currency. How the Bilderbergers intend to achieve their one-world vision is outlined in the following wish list. They want one international identity by empowering international bodies to completely destroy all national identity through subversion from within. They intend to establish one set of universal values. No others will be allowed to flourish in the future. Centralized control of the people. By means of mind control, they plan to direct all humanity to obey their wishes. The blueprint of their plan is chillingly, if you'll bear with me for a minute.
We can use a suspense. Chillingly, that gives a little bit of a sinister atmosphere. Chillingly what?
Yes, it does. This is chopped off a little bit. I believe it says chillingly in line with Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. Now, another item, a zero-growth society. In a post-industrial period, zero growth will be necessary to destroy vestiges of general prosperity. When there is prosperity, there is progress. Prosperity and progress make it impossible to implement repression. And you need repression if you hope to divide society into owners and slaves. And in Phyllis Schlafly's book, A Choice, Not an Echo, it mentions that the Republican Party was secretly controlled by elitist intellectuals, nominated by members of the Bilderberg Group, whose internationalist policies would give way to the world communism.
And, Lou, we'd have to interject.
Yes.
The rhinos have progressed even farther than that, I'm sure.
I believe that they have,
into
yes.
Into the Benedict Arnolds,
yep.
We see.
And British Brexit hero Nigel Farage also warns that the Bilderbergs Bilderbergers are conspiratorial. So that's the Bilderbergers. Now I think we're going to move on to our news blitz.
Yes. And you know what? We've talked about these big meetings, but there are a lot of things that happen in these clandestine little meetings. So here, first we have by Kellen McBreen, July 6th from InfoWars, Globalists Unite. Pope Francis meets with Bill Clinton and Alex Soros. footage out of Vatican City shows Pope Francis meeting with former U.S. President Bill Clinton and globalist billionaire George Soros' son, Alex. Video of the meetup is going viral as citizens around the world note globalism is operating in front of our very faces. The Pope and Clinton traded gifts with Pope Francis, giving the former president a statue of a woman holding a dove, allegedly representing, quote, a work for peace, end of quote. Clinton's gift to Pope Francis was a tray with the United States seal on it, along with a personal note. You know, Lou, wouldn't we all love to see what was on that personal note?
Yes, we sure would. Yes. That would have been some very interesting information. That's right. And now we go to National File Breaking with another little story. Directors of Epstein's Brothers Foundation meet with the Pope.
Another meeting
That's right.
Didn't hear about in the New York Times.
Sure didn't. And the overall headline says, seemingly not content with meeting convicted pedophiles, Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, the Vatican has just hosted two directors of the Epstein-directed and financed Humpty Dumpty Institute.
What was the date on this?
This was June 12th, 2023.
So this is current?
Yes, it is. This is by Frankie Stocks. Mark Epstein's bizarrely named and nefariously linked Humpty Dumpty Institute, or HDI, has today trumpeted the meeting of two long-standing HDI directors with His Holiness Pope Francis, also known as Argentina's George Mario Bergoglio. The Vatican, currently led by a man referred to as Washington's Pope, akin to a deep state operative in the CIA's Operation Gladio handbook, have a documented track record of meetings with unsavory characters, including the world's most notorious pedophiles and human traffickers, that being the late Jeffrey Epstein and his wing henchwoman, the Israeli Mossad-affiliated convict and HDI-tied Ghislaine Maxwell. And this is a quote. HDI is proud to report that the vice chair of HDI Board of Directors, Mrs. Morgan Slyker de Nicola, and board member, Mr. Cosmo de Nicola, were received by His Holiness Pope Francis, unquote. The Humpty Dumpty Institute wrote in a LinkedIn post documenting the Epstein and CCP-tied influence operations meeting with the Vatican and with Pope Francis himself. Now we have another quote. In addition to his involvement in HDI's humanitarian and cultural work, Mr. De Nicola is also in the Board of Trustees of the Papal Foundation, unquote, further documenting the HDI henchman's relationship with the Vatican. And we have this quote. The Papal Foundation is the major Roman Catholic philanthropic organization in the United States, which assists the Pope in fulfilling his humanitarian, educational, and spiritual goals, unquote. Included in the Epstein-tied Humpty Dumpty Institute's aforementioned humanitarian work has been trips to orphanages in Ukraine and other war-torn nations. National Files have previously reported on the close ties between Epstein's HDI and the Vatican. Indeed, according to Julian Assange's WikiLeaks, HDI's current CEO, Joseph Maranti, was formerly chargé d'affaires at the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See and held that position on or around the time Epstein Maxwell met with Pope John Paul. Since leaving his cushy and well-paid U.S. State Department post and joining Epstein's HDI, Maranti has been instrumental in forging ever stronger and largely suspicious ties between radical elements of U.S. Congress, itinerant rhinos, the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, and its military arm, the People's Liberation Army, PLA.
And Lou, this goes back a ways then to Pope John Paul. This kind of ongoing relationship there that's nefarious. Go ahead.
Yes, it sure does, yes. And also utilizing a mask or beard known as, those are of course in quotes, a mask or beard known as the Tay Institute. Jeffrey's brother Mark is often pictured in these closed-door meetings. Curiously, other conservative outlets, and that word conservative is in quotes, other conservative outlets in and around the D.C. Beltway broadly refused to touch the national security topic that is the CCP-PLA-connected Humpty Dumpty Institute, largely because of tangible involvement from the State of Israel, ostensibly a key U.S. ally. Some, when they do cover HDI, selectively remove the long-standing and apparently active participation of Mark Epstein in the organization. GOP member of Congress Marjorie Taylor Greene, with knowledge of HDI's links to the Chinese Communist Party and its PLA military arm, has refused to touch the issue.
And I think that gives us the idea of that one.
Yes,
now, another one of these little person-to-person tete-a-tetes, again, with Pope Francis hosting WHO Director General in private Vatican meeting. Now, this was by Michael Haynes at LifeSite News, July 24th. This is rather ominous. Can this meeting perhaps be setting up some future structures of tyranny to work along with Joe Biden's new permanent pandemic office? We don't know. So Vatican City, Pope Francis received the Director General of the Pro-Abortion World Health Organization, who, in a private audience at the Vatican this morning, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the current Director General of the WHO, met with Pope Francis in private audience July 24th in a meeting which was only announced afterwards in the Holy See's daily bulletin. No further details were released by the Vatican, and LifeSite's requests for comments were not returned by time of publication. Tedros, who has led the WHO as Director General since 2017, previously met Pope Francis in 2018 when they discussed, quote, ways to ensure that all people can obtain the health care they need, whoever they are, wherever they live. Tedros praised Pope Francis's support for our effort to extend the right of life and health to all people. Since then, Tedros has given public support to some of Pope Francis's own messages regarding the response to COVID-19, including the Pope's August 19, 2020 weekly audience in which he called for, quote, the pandemic response to include focusing on, quote, social injustice and environmental damage, end of quote. Tedros praised the Pontiff's message, in which the Pope also outlined that only industries which met specific criteria should be assisted to recover after the COVID-19-related restrictions. The criteria were, quote, those which contribute to the inclusion of the excluded, to the promotion of the last, to the common good, and the care of creation. It sounds like that green kind of propaganda machine. If you're not connected to it, you don't get what you want to have. Back to the article, Tedros had previously told Reuters on the day of the infamous pro-abortion rulings overturning, and that would be Roe v. Wade, that, quote, I am very disappointed because women's rights must be protected, and I would have expected America to protect such rights, end of quote. Both Pope Francis and Tedros share similar outlooks with regard to COVID-19 issues, with even the Pope famously advocating for people to receive doses of the abortion-tainted injections, which were promoted globally by the WHO, the World Health Organization. While Francis has increased his links to the WHO and other global organizations such as the UN and the World Economic Forum, the WHO has come under fire for its attempts to secure even more global power via the new amendments in the WHO's international health regulations. And we have to interrupt there to say that Lou did his part to call up his Democrat Congress senators, because we really did not want those amendments to be adopted. It would have taken away a lot of freedom. And we've all been given a reprieve that this year the WHO was not able to ratify the pandemic treaty. So we must pray again next year that they cannot ratify this, because this really does put us under the world police medical state. And with the forced injections and all of the draconian things that we saw happen in Australia during COVID. So now the article does say, proposed by the Biden administration, the new amendments would, quote, empower the WHO's Director General to declare health emergencies or crises in any nation and to do so unilaterally and against the opposition of the target nation. In other words, Lou, that means the WHO could just pick out America to target.
Yeah, it means that they could just say, well, the heck with your Congress, the heck with your president, you got to do this, and you got to make every member, every citizen of your country, every resident in your country obey what we say.
Yes, and I think I'll have to jump the gun here to this article, this headline, Biden setting stage for second round of medical martial law by Ethan Huff, Natural News, August 7th. We brought it up once before, but we've got to know about this because it'll work together with the WHO. The regime of fake President Joe Biden is setting in stone a new permanent federal agency to handle future, quote, pandemics. Because the Wuhan coronavirus, COVID-19, was only just the beginning. Called the Office of Pandemic Preparedness and Response Policy, OPPR, the agency was hastily and quietly established on July 21st to handle whatever the globalists have in store for the world as the next COVID 2.0 event. It would seem as though the three-year COVID PSYOP was merely a test run to iron out the kinks for the next much bigger PSYOP even. COVID was the catalyst for implementing the OPPR, much like how the 9/11 terrorist attacks were the catalyst for the Bush regime to establish the Department of Homeland Security. The way it works is the government stages an emergency or disaster that is then used as an excuse to expand the government's power. 9/11 brought about airport tyranny. That is, naked body scanners, pat-downs, while COVID is bringing about the OPPR. And that, again, is the Office of Pandemic Preparedness and Response Policy, which will oversee enforcement of the next round of masking, lockdowns, and forced injections. And we probably have just a little bit more here. By creating this new office and emphasizing that it will be permanent, this is a red flag that should have our keen attention, warns Leo Homan. Is the government still drunk with new powers gained from the last pandemic, telegraphing to us plebeians that another pandemic is right around the corner? When Trump announced the launch of Operation Warp Speed, he specified that it was about getting COVID jabs out to the masses quickly. And we know that our military is now being mobilized, so that at the end of the year, we're going to be able to give it to a lot of people very, very rapidly. Those were Trump's words about Operation Warp Speed. What will the next COVID 2.0 pandemic event entail? We don't know, but we'll be bringing you news, hard-hitting news, every week on The Divided Kingdom. Thank you for listening, and good night.